Good evening. I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, since the early show on Thursday, we have been reading to you verbatim from a voluminous pile of research proving that the United States of America really does not exist, that we are a vassal state of the United Nations. The only problem is that the people just haven't been fully informed of that yet. The Congress knows about it. The Joint Chiefs of Staff know about it. The Supreme Court justices know about it. The Justice Department knows about it. The FBI knows about it. Everybody knows about it, but the sheeple. And folks, there is no doubt this is not conjecture. We're not coming off the wall with this. This, in fact, will be the 8th hour of Freedom, well, actually the 7th, the second, or the late episode of the Hour of the Time last night was not from these documents, but was from one of the principal researchers. This will be the, in fact, 7th hour of reading verbatim from the documentation that proves that the government, bounded by that border known as the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., is a counterfeit, illegal, unlawful, unconstitutional, and treasonous government. That's right, folks. And that most of the politicians who have supposedly represented us, or who have supposedly been working for the people, have in fact been traitors. The people in Washington right now know this. Bill Clinton knew it tonight when he made his speech on the State of the Nation to the Congress. And ladies and gentlemen, if you watched it, now you know why they call him Slick Willie. Don't go away. I'll be right back right after this short pause. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are right now living in a state of war. The state of war was actually declared in an executive order written by the president in which the people of the United States of America are declared to be the enemy. This executive order was written in 1933, and we will get to that much later. They are in the process of creating a one-world totalitarian socialist government. They're justifying in the eyes of the people. They are creating the Hegelian dialectic of political conflict resolutions through the clash of opposites. The people cry for the solution, which will be the one world government. During all of the broadcasts of this show, during and beginning on May the 4th, 1992. We have been revealing this to you, and we're the only ones who have revealed it to you, and the truth to you, and the true enemy to you, and have cited page, book, document, quoted from their own words. There is no doubt we're engaged in a spiritual battle, folks, a spiritual battle, which, if you don't get out of the foggy dew that your mind is residing in, we're going to lose. And I, for one, am not a loser, do not want to lose. And so I have embarked upon a great crusade to wake you up. Why? Well, I've been called a fool. I've been told that all you will ever do is spit in my face and turn against me. I've been told that I am beating my head against the wall. I've been asked to join the other side because of what I know and because they say that you are nothing but cattle and will never wake up. And I just can't do it. For some reason, folks, I love you. I love this nation. I love the Constitution. I love the Bill of Rights. I know what they all mean. I know what they all are. And I will not abandon what has proven throughout the history of the world to be the very best that has ever existed. I will not go backwards. I will not relegate the future of my children to a dismal, miserable life in a totalitarian socialist order where you pretend to work and they pretend to pay you, and all the last vestiges of human dignity, morality, and worth are stripped from the human race. So pay attention, ladies and gentlemen, during the early episode of the Hour of the Time, which airs every night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 Mountain, 7 Central, and 8 Eastern Standard Time. We covered information on the education bill before the Arizona State Legislature, and we covered quite a bit of testimony by both senators and representatives in the Senate and in the House, and in the Senate and House congressional record from which I read verbatim. I will now begin where I left off. However, as always, I will back up just a little bit so that I don't start somewhere where it doesn't make any sense. Now let us look at the record. And by the way, I'm quoting once again from the congressional record from the House of Representatives, January 15, 1962, page 215. Now let us look at the record. According to Craig of Lie, longtime Secretary General of the United Nations, he stated flatly that there was a secret agreement between Alger Hiss and Molotov to the effect that the head of the United Nations military staff should always be a communist. Now, I break here, folks, to let you know, Alger Hiss was himself a communist, was arrested, tried, and convicted of espionage against the United States government working for the Soviet Union, was sentenced to prison. The liberals in the nation now have been trying to get him exonerated. He cannot be exonerated because it is the truth. He was the one responsible for the writing of the United Nations Charter. He is the one that made this agreement with Molotov that the head of the military forces for the United Nations would always be a communist. If you will check the record, you will find that the head of the military forces for the United Nations has always been a communist, is now a communist, and according to the agreement, always will be a communist. That needed to be explained. And I continue. That agreement has never been broken, and we have had a succession of communists filling that post, the present one being Mr. Arkadov, as a first consequence of this treasonous agreement. This country lost its first military engagement in Korea at a cost to this country of more than $20 billion and 145,000 American casualties, to say nothing of the honor and prestige of this nation. This was the first war in which we engaged not as the United States military forces, but as a United Nations force, although we contributed 90% of the men and the money. How convenient this was to the communists to have one of their own men as head of the United Nations military staff who reviewed all orders going from the Pentagon to General MacArthur and gave them to our enemy before General MacArthur even received them. The enemy, which consisted of the Red Communist Army and Russian equipment and flyers, was driven back to the Yalu River and given sanctuary on the other side. General MacArthur could have destroyed the enemy in short order had he been permitted to pursue them across the river from whence they came. Because General MacArthur could not, in good conscience, follow these orders, he was recalled, and the Korean War ended in dismal defeat thanks to Harry S. Truman, 33rd degree Freemason of the Scottish Rite, and was past Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry of the state of Missouri. He is the one who signed the United Nations Treaty, pushed through Congress, and passed and signed into law the UN Participation Act, created the Veil of National Security, the Central Intelligence Agency, and staffed them with members of the secret societies to work in secret to destroy the sovereignty of all nations and bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist government. There are traitors all around us. Joseph McCarthy, ladies and gentlemen, was correct. He just didn't know what to call them, and he didn't have a chance. Didn't have a chance once the socialist-controlled press began to vilify him. I continue. We were sold the United Nations on a promise of peace, but we failed to realize that this peace was to be on communist terms. In fact, it was to be a total victory for the international communist conspiracy. Our faith in this hope was so firm that we were lulled into a state of false security while the communist world gobbled up 13 or 14 countries, bringing 800 million people under their domination. Russia has used the veto power nearly 100 times. The United Nations has been completely unable to bring any degree of peace, and Russia itself has created 13 or 14 military conflicts between the East and the West. Now bear in mind, this is from the Congressional Record of the House of Representatives, dated January the 15th, 1962, folks. 1962. I'll continue. The United Nations has not as yet passed a resolution of censorship against Russia for its Hungarian bloodbath, but rather stood idly by and helped to betray the Hungarian freedom fighters into the hands of Russia. It could not even get a censorship resolution against India for its military invasion of Portuguese enclaves. Further, Mr. Speaker, what, may I ask, is the United Nations doing to prevent President Sukarno of Indonesia from carrying out his military attack against the island possession of Holland, which lies more than 1,000 miles away from Indonesia? Is colonialism under Holland a bad thing, but colonialism under pro-communist Indonesia a good thing? I have been unable to get any rationale on this question. In fact, it has passed no resolutions of condemnation against Russia or any of its satellites or against the so-called neutral countries, but busies itself with resolutions of condemnation against our allies such as Portugal, Holland, and France. Our defeat in the abortive Cuban invasion can be laid on the doorstep of the United Nations, as the United Nations Treaty prohibits us from engaging in any military operations without the consent of the United Nations Security Council, in which Russia holds the veto power. At this point, Mr. Speaker, may I remind the members of the House and the people of America that the Cuban situation was not even mentioned in the President's State of the Union message on January the 11th, although the so-called white paper issued by the Department of State declares that Cuba constitutes a Sino-Soviet bridgehead in the Western Hemisphere, and that the military power of Cuba is second only to that of the United States in the Western Hemisphere, due, of course, to the millions of dollars of armaments, equipment, and technicians, and money furnished by the communist countries to Fidel Castro. You can expect to see a one-world government communist control under the United Nations. You will see the United Nations run up astronomical debts, which we, under the terms of the treaty, are bound to pay. In a book by William Z. Foster, former head of the Communist Party USA, entitled Towards Soviet America, he gives a complete blueprint of the conquest of America by the international communist conspiracy. It is as clear a blueprint as given by Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf. Following are some of the things you may look for under the controlled communist America, as stated by William Z. Foster. The final aim of the Communist International is to overthrow world capitalism and replace it by world communism. The Communist Party of the United States is the American section of the Communist International. The Communist International carries out a united revolutionary program on a world scale. The American Soviet government will be organized along the broad lines of the Russian Soviets. Under the dictatorship, all the capitalist parties, Republican, Democratic, Progressive, Socialist, etc., will be liquidated. Likewise, will be dissolved all other organizations, including Chambers of Commerce, Employers Associations, Rotary Clubs, American Legion, YMCA, and such fraternal orders as the Masons, Odd Fellows, Elks, Knights of Columbus, etc. Lawyers will be abolished. The press, the motion pictures, the radio, the theater will be taken over by the government. Studies will be revolutionized, being cleansed of religious, patriotic, and other features of the bourgeois ideology. The decisions of the Soviets are enforced by the armed Red Guard. Citizenship is restricted to those who do useful work. Capitalists, landlords, clericals, and other non-producers being disenfranchised. In the so-called Black Belt of the South, where the Negroes are in the majority, they will have the fullest right to govern themselves and also such white minorities as may live in this section. Where the party elects its candidates to legislative bodies, they make use of these public forums to bring forward the communist program. The trade unions are the great schools for communism. Religion has sanctified every war and every tyrant, no matter how murderous and reactionary. The free American women, like her Russian sister, will scorn the whole of bourgeois sex hypocrisy and prudery. Ladies and gentlemen, as I've been saying on this show, all of you who are helping to bring this about will be the first ones, according to their own admission, whom they will eliminate. And these fools don't even understand that. These are the same people that Stalin eliminated when he took power in Russia. These are the same people that were eliminated in Cuba. These are the same people that were eliminated after the French Revolution. So on and so on and so on, right down the line, folks. The same people who bring them to power are the first ones that they always destroy. The intelligentsia always bring them to power in concert with the secret societies who infiltrate and work from within, and these are the people that they always destroy first. It's never failed. Once they come to power, they know how they got there, and they destroy the people who brought them to power so that someone else cannot be brought up to depose them. These are also the people who will soon discover that the system doesn't work. Here in America, I cannot believe the number of people who buy the socialist agenda, who look around the world and see that everywhere that has been put into place, it has brought on nothing but suffering and death and misery and labor camps and the destruction of the human spirit. We have everything to live for in this country. We have had more than any nation and any people on the face of this earth. Yet these stupid fools, these socialist puppets, these ignoramuses, these no-brain, airheaded twits want to destroy this nation and make it another socialist puppet. It is beyond my understanding, folks, how this happens. It's beyond my understanding how people can even think like this. It's beyond my understanding how they can rationalize and justify why everyone else is going to suffer, but not them. Not them. And if you talk to them, you'll find out that that's exactly what they think. It's just like when Jane Fonda was campaigning all over California and the nation for gun control, and she was stopped in her car on a freeway in California, and the police found the car was full of guns, and you know what she said? She said, "That's for everybody else. I'm a famous person, and I need protection." So it's okay for her to have guns in her car. But she was traveling around the nation with this car full of guns, promoting gun control. It's the typical socialist mindset. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Never has, and as far as I can see, never will. The socialist system has never, ever been a success in any experiment where it has ever been tried, where it has ever been put to work. In any country where socialism has prevailed, it has always failed. Ladies and gentlemen, again, from the Congressional Record of the House, our Declaration of Independence concludes with these words, quote, "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor," unquote. Now, does that mean that all of you out there listening refuse to pledge your lives? Have you gone back on this? You'd rather have your fortunes than your freedom? And I guess you don't have any sacred honor, because I don't see too many of you standing up and doing anything about it. Let me read that to you again, folks. It concludes, our Declaration of Independence concludes with these words, and I would recommend that you read the entire document, by the way, if you don't have a copy. You're really not an American anyway. Quote, "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." This, folks, is a full and complete acknowledgement of divine guidance. Nowhere in the United Nations Charter or any of its subsidiaries do you find any reference to a supreme being. The Bible says, quote, "Unless the Lord build an house, they labor in vain who build it," unquote. Socialists don't believe in God. They don't believe in anything. That's why they are socialists. That's why they need the big, protective, all-encompassing, all-powerful socialist state, which to them is their daddy, to protect them against the cruelties of the world, to powder their butts, to change their diapers, to send them off to school, to learn the little socialist catechism, to clothe them and to feed them and to make sure that they have a job, whether they know how to work or not, doesn't make any difference. And they all pretend to work, and Daddy pretends to pay them. And then, just like in the Soviet Union, everybody jumps into a bottle of vodka and lives in the fantasy that the great Soviet state or the socialist state is, in fact, the world utopia. I continue from the Congressional Record. There is indeed no evidence of the Lord's work in the United Nations. I know that I will be accused of being irresponsible and fanatical, but I find myself in good company. The testimony of five of our greatest fighting men, General Clark, General Van Fleet, General Stratmeyer, Admiral Joy, and Lieutenant General Almond before the Jenner Committee in 1954, is summed up in the words of General Stratmeyer. Quote, "We were required to lose the Korean War," unquote. Lord Beaverbrook, noted British publisher, said, "Here in New York City, you Americans have the biggest fifth column in the world, the United Nations. Why do you think the United Nations was built upon American soil? dear listeners. Where did the land come from? Boy, my English teacher would sure smack me upside the head for that. Where did the land come from? Why, it was purchased and donated by the Rockefeller family. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rockefeller family is a Zionist family. Behind all of this in the world today, as you will ultimately come to find out at the end of our series on Mystery Babylon, is international Zionism. It has nothing to do with reestablishing the state of Israel, and the Jews have a rude awakening, for they are being used in this plot, this plan. And all of you who believe that it's the Jews bringing it about, you better think again. For it is Queen Elizabeth sitting on her throne in England who claims to be the ruler of Israel, and she claims that the stone which is held under her throne is Jacob's pillar. And it is that claim, she claims, that gives her the right to rule. She claims direct descendancy from the house of David. And if you've read prophecy, you know what that means. And all of these identity Christian groups who are being taught lies are being used also to help bring this about. To help bring it about. If you study the history of the Anglo-Aryan races in Northern Europe, you will find they have no connection to Israel, no Hebrew root in their language, and they were, in fact, terrible, terrifying, naked murderers, thieves, vagabonds, and pagans through and through. There is no trace of the religion that Jesus Christ gave to us in the Middle East, anywhere to be found in the ancient history of the Anglo-Aryan peoples. They are not the tribe of Israel. We will prove that on this program, ladies and gentlemen, if you've got the patience to stick it out. At this point, continuing in the Congressional Record of the House, at this point, may I say, Mr. Speaker, that Alger Hiss recommended the first 500 employees for the United Nations. Then after that, the late Robert Taft said, the United Nations has become a trap. Let's go it alone. Herbert Hoover said, unless the United Nations is completely reorganized without the communist nations in it, we should get out of it. Winston Churchill said, don't pay attention to the United Nations. Charles de Gaulle has warned the United Nations to stay out of Algeria. Now, Mr. Speaker, let us look at the present management of the United Nations. Russia had been demanding a troika to supplant the United Nations Secretariat after the death of Hammarskjöld. The failure of Russia to secure this troika was hailed as a great victory for the West. But was it? U Thant of Burma, a self-styled Marxist, was chosen, and he agreed to invite a limited number of United Nations undersecretaries to act as my principal advisors on important questions. So far, he has indicated two. Georgi P. Arkadov, a communist from the Soviet Union, the head of the military forces for the United Nations, and Ralph Bunche of the United States. This was a communist victory in that Russia now has its troika. One, an avowed Marxist, the second, a dedicated communist, and the third, with a pro-communist bias. A resume of Dr. Bunche's record, prepared by Archibald B. Roosevelt, son of Theodore Roosevelt, includes this paragraph. Quote, Dr. Bunche was part of the editorial apparatus of an openly communist magazine, Science and Society, for over 4 years. He contributed to this publication and added his name and prestige as a professor of Howard University even after the communists in their publication. The communists openly state that Science and Society magazine had as its function to help Marxward-moving students and intellectuals to come closer to Marxism-Leninism, to bring communist thought into academic circles. In a Senate probe by the Internal Security Subcommittee, it was brought out that Dr. Bunche had repeatedly pressured persons in charge of United Nations employment to hire a notorious communist agent, in spite of the fact that here was a derogatory report against the individual by a security agency of the government. Dr. Bunch was a high official in the Institute of Pacific Relations, an organization investigated thoroughly by the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee and described as follows. The effective leadership of the IPR used IPR prestige to promote the interests of the Soviet Union in the United States. Let me read that again. The effective leadership of the IPR used IPR prestige to promote the interests of the Soviet Union in the United States. Dr. Bunch is on record as supporting the position of the IPR leadership in this matter. This Troika arrangement engineered by the communists is frightening and devastating. When you consider the United States of America has no foreign policy of its own except the United Nations, and we covered that previously and proved it. This is it, Mr. Speaker. If this republic is to perish, we ourselves within our own household will be the architect and finisher of our fate. Don't go away, folks. I'll be right back after this very short pause. Folks, we're very lucky to have someone that we can turn to that can help us in our hour of need. In our hour of need. If that makes any sense. We have formed a partnership quite a while ago with Swiss America Trading and the people who own that company and who work there. And the partnership is this. They believe in the message of the hour of the time. I believe that all of us need their services because we must have some precious metals in one or more of its various forms in order to protect us against the economic trauma that is looming in our near future. I was approached by many different firms who provided the same service. After investigating each one of them, and this investigation took some time, we decided that Swiss America Trading was the only one that I can attach my personal reputation, attach my name to. You see, because I could never just take somebody's money and get on the air and promote their product, no matter what it was, if I didn't believe in it 100% myself. If I didn't believe that we all needed it, myself. If I didn't trust and believe that the people who ran this business were good people, just like most of us. So the partnership is, they furnish a good service. They have rules. They have disclosures. They have procedures that they follow to make sure that things are done properly. And I make their service available to you through this program, this outlet, the hour of the time. They pay for this airtime. Not one penny even passes through my hands. I never even see it. It goes directly to WWCR as per our agreement. I have never received one single penny from Swiss America Trading, ever. Ever. I've become good friends with Craig Smith and with any of the other people who work there, Gene Miller and some of the others. I know that they're honest. I know that they care about this country, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They care about the message of this broadcast, and they care about you. They care about our future. They are ready and willing to help you. All you have to do is call them. And I want you to do that. You need to do it. Look around at the faces of your loved ones sitting around you now. If they're not, if they're in bed, go in very quietly. Just look at them in the bed. If you can honestly say to yourself that you have taken steps to protect their financial future, should anything calamitous happen, then you're okay. If you can't do that, if you can't do it, then you must be responsible to do it now. If you're not, you must answer to them sooner or later. Call Swiss America Trading right now. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Thank them for caring about this country. Ask them for the newsletters and other written material that you're entitled to as a listener of this program. And by the way, you're entitled to Super Number One. Upfront service above and beyond anybody else, because that's part of our agreement too. Ask them to tell you about the different ways that they have for you to invest your assets in order to protect them. In order to protect them, folks. 1-800-289-2646. If you have a particular investment that you are really interested in and you don't want to hear about anything else, tell them that. If you don't really understand how all this works, ask them to explain it to you, and they will. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. You'll be real glad that you did. I now continue from the United States Code, 1988 edition, Supplement 3. That's the United States Code, 1988 edition, Supplement 3, containing the general and permanent laws of the United States enacted during the 101st Congress and 102nd Congress, first session, prepared and published under authority of Title II, U.S. Code, Section 285B, by the Office of the Law Revision Council of the House of Representatives, January 3rd, 1989 to January 2nd, 1992, Volume 2, Title 12, Banks and Banking, to Title 22, Foreign Relations and Intercourse, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1992. Pay attention. Make sure you have your pencil and pad of paper by your side. It's important that you understand these things. On page 1637, Title 22, Foreign Relations and Intercourse, Section 2551, Chapter 35, Arms Control and Disarmament. Go down to Subchapter 1, General Provisions, Congressional Statement of Purpose. Short title of 1989 Amendment, Public Law 101-216, Section 1, December 11, 1989. 103 Statutes at Large, 1853, provided that this Act, enacting sections 257-7A and 2595-2595C of this title, amending sections 2563, 2567, 2588, and 2589 of this title, and enacting provisions set out as notes under sections 2565 and 2567 of this title, may be cited as the Arms Control and Disarmament Amendments Act of 1989.
paragraph. Soviet weapons destruction. Soviet weapons destruction. Public Law 102-228, Title 2, December 12, 1991, 105 statutes, looks like 1693, provided that, this writing is very tiny, folks. Section 201, short title. This title may be cited as the Soviet Nuclear Threat Reduction Act of 1991. National Defense and Soviet Weapons Destruction. Findings. The Congress finds that the Soviet President Gorbachev has requested Western help in dismantling nuclear weapons, and President Bush has proposed United States cooperation on the storage, transportation, dismantling, and destruction of Soviet nuclear weapons, and we're being told that that hasn't occurred. And it's a lie. 1. Making a substantial investment of its resources for dismantling or destroying such weapons. 2. Foregoing any military modernization program that exerts legitimate defense requirements, and foregoing the replacement of destroyed weapons of mass destruction. 3. Foregoing any use of fissionable and other components of destroyed nuclear weapons and new nuclear weapons. 4. Facilitating United States verification of weapons destruction carried out under Section 212. 5. Complying with all relevant arms control agreements. And 6. Observing international recognized human rights, including the protection of minorities. I told you, folks, the United States of America and the United Nations are one and the same. One and the same. You want to see Mystery Babylon? Go look in the mirror. Destroy nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, and other weapons. Transport, store, disable, and safeguard weapons in connection with their destruction. And 3. Establish verifiable safeguards against the proliferation of such weapons. This is 1989, ladies and gentlemen, 1989, ladies and gentlemen, 1989, when we were told that no such thing was taking place. When did the Berlin Wall fall? We have been deceived big time. Big time. Bigger time than you ever will probably know in your entire life, regardless of what you hear on the show. Listen to this. Administration of Nuclear Threat Reduction Programs. Funding. Transfer authority. The President may, to the extent provided in an Appropriations Act or joint resolution, transfer to the appropriate defense accounts from amounts appropriated to the Department of Defense for fiscal year 1992 for operation and maintenance, or from balance in working capital accounts established under Section 2208 of Title 10, United States Code, not to exceed $400 million for use in reducing the Soviet military threat under Part B. In other words, we paid for it. Sheeple, we paid for it. Before the Berlin Wall fell, folks. Section 2567, this makes me sick. Special Representatives for Arms Control and Disarmament Negotiations, Appointment, Powers, and Duties. The President may appoint, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, two Special Representatives for Arms Control and Disarmament Negotiations, one of whom should serve as Special Representative for Conventional Arms Control Negotiations. That means your weapons, ladies and gentlemen. And the other should serve as Special Representative and Chief Science Advisor to the Director. The two Special Representatives shall perform their duties and exercise their power under the direction of the President and the Secretary of State, acting through the Director. Now, folks, this is 1989. Title 22, Foreign Relations Intercourse, page 1640. Again, 1989, same law. Subchapter 3, Functions, section 2577A. arms control verification. Establishment of working group. The president should establish a working group, one, to examine verification approaches to a strategic arms reduction agreement and other arms control agreements, and to assess the relevance for such agreements of the verification provisions of the treaty between the United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on the elimination of their intermediate range and shorter range missiles, signed at Washington, December 8, 1987. Didn't know all this was going on, did you? Information and database. The agency shall allocate sufficient resources to develop and maintain a comprehensive information and database on verification concepts, research, technologies, and systems. The agency shall collect, maintain, analyze, and disseminate information pertaining to arms control verification and monitoring, including information regarding A, all current United States bilateral and multilateral arms treaties, and B, proposed, prospective, and potential bilateral or multilateral arms treaties in the areas of nuclear, conventional, chemical, and space weapons. Two, the agency shall seek to improve the United States verification and monitoring activities through the monitoring and support of relevant research and analysis. Under appropriations, amount to carry out the purposes of this chapter, there are authorized to be appropriated, and this is on top of what I've already given you. Number one, $44,527,000 for fiscal year 1992 and $45,862,810 for fiscal year 1993, and two, such additional amounts as may be necessary for each fiscal year for which an authorization of appropriations is provided in paragraph one for increases in salary, pay, retirement, other employee benefits authorized by law, and, here's where it comes, folks, other non-discretionary costs, and to offset adverse fluctuations in foreign currency exchange rates. We have searched for those figures, and they are, of course, classified. Subchapter 5, On-Site Inspection Activities. The Congress finds that, one, under this chapter, the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency is charged with the formulation and implementation of United States Arms Control and Disarmament Policy in a manner which will promote the national security. Two, as defined in this chapter, the terms arms control and disarmament mean, and listen to this, the identification, verification, inspection, limitation, control, reduction, elimination of armed forces and armaments of all kinds under international agreement to establish an effective system of international control. Did you hear that, Chiefel? I hope so. Going down to paragraph 5, the on-site inspection agency has additional responsibilities to those specified in paragraph 4, including the monitoring of nuclear tests pursuant to the Threshold Test Ban Treaty and the Peaceful Nuclear Explosions Treaty, and the monitoring of the inspection provisions of such additional arms control agreements as the President may direct. Additional arms control agreements as the President may direct. The personnel of the on-site inspection agency includes civilian technical experts, civilian support personnel, and members of the armed forces. And over here, the United States is currently engaged in multilateral and bilateral negotiations seeking to achieve treaties or agreements to reduce or eliminate various types of military weapons and to make certain reductions in military personnel levels. These negotiations include negotiations for A, reductions in strategic forces, conventional armaments, and military personnel levels. Regimes for monitoring nuclear testing, and C, the complete elimination of chemical weapons. Down in 5, on-site inspection procedures are likely to be an integral part of any future arms control treaty agreement. And that's all I'm going to read on that page. There's lots more. Lots more, folks. I'm just trying to pick out what's pertinent because I still have a huge pile of paperwork here. Okay. And that's about auditing. Let's people over here. Public Law 102-228, H.R. 3807, December 12, 1991, Conventional Forces in Europe Treaty Implementation Act of 1991. An act to amend the Arms Export Control Act to authorize the president, listen to this, folks, an act to amend the Arms Export Control Act to authorize the president to transfer battle tanks, artillery pieces, and armored combat vehicles to member countries of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in conjunction with implementation of the Treaty on Conventional Armed Forces in Europe. Acceptance of NATO assistance in meeting certain compliance with the CFE treaty mandated obligations for destruction of conventional armaments and equipment limited by the CFE treaty. The United States may utilize services of funds provided by NATO or any NATO CFE country. Section 25 definitions as used in this chapter. The term CFE treaty means the Treaty on Conventional Armed Forces in Europe, signed at Paris, November 19, 1990. The term conventional armaments and equipment limited by the CFE treaty has the same meaning as the term conventional armaments and equipment limited by the treaty does under paragraph 1J of Article 2 of the CFE treaty. And 3, the term NATO means the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Findings and Program Authority. A, findings. The Congress finds that Soviet President Gorbachev has requested Western help in dismantling nuclear weapons, and President Bush has proposed United States cooperation on the storage, transportation, dismantling, and destruction of Soviet nuclear weapons. And again, it talks about we're going to do it and we're going to pay for it. And I already read that section, so I won't do it again. Some of these documents, even though they're in different documents under different laws and things, repeat what we've already read. Arms Control and Disarmament Act, Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Authorization of Appropriations. And this is $36 million for the year 1990, $37,316,000 for the fiscal year 1991, $44,527,000 for fiscal year 1992, $45,862,000 for fiscal year 1993. And this was approved December the 12th, 1991. Again, so every couple of years, they redo it all again. It's always the same, always leading us closer to a one-world government, always working in concert with the Soviet Union or Russia, as it is now. Conventional Forces in Europe Treaty Implementation Act of 1991. Mr. Faschel. Mr. Speaker, I move to suspend the rules and pass the bill H.R. 3807 to amend the Arms Export Control Act to authorize the President to transfer battle tanks, artillery pieces, and armored combat vehicles to member countries of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in conjunction with implementation of the Treaty on Conventional Armed Forces in Europe. Now bear in mind, folks, that the proposal that is on the table is to allow Russia and other Eastern Bloc nations to join the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance. Later in these documents, we will prove that NATO was formed to hasten, ladies and gentlemen, the formation of the one world government and a UN peacekeeping force. And all of these plans were laid many, many years ago. The act was, in fact, passed. Implementation of the CFE treaty will involve one of the largest disarmament programs in history. I'm reading from the Congressional Record House, November 19, 1991, page H10560. Implementation of the CFE treaty will involve one of the largest disarmament programs in history. The Soviet Union alone will have to destroy the military capacity of many thousands of tanks, artillery, and other pieces of equipment. Furthermore, it will constrain Soviet conventional forces even within the Western Soviet Union. When the treaty is fully implemented, the Soviets will retain in Europe only 35% of the equipment they held in 1983. Moreover, a provision of the treaty known as the sufficiency rule will prevent any nation from creating a conventional force greater than one-third of the total armaments permitted in the area. Do you hear that? Permitted in the area, which means the UN is dictating to us how much armaments are permitted in our area, and we're only allowed to have, well, let me read this. The treaty known as the sufficiency rule will prevent any nation from creating a conventional force greater than one-third of the total armaments permitted in the area. Which means if we're only allowed to have one-third of the total armaments permitted in our area, where are the other two-thirds going to come from, ladies and gentlemen? It says this provision applies to all treaty signatories. I'm going to read this whole paragraph again for you. Implementation of the CFE treaty will involve one of the largest disarmament programs in history. The Soviet Union alone will have to destroy the military capacity of many thousands of tanks, artillery pieces, and other pieces of equipment. Furthermore, it will constrain Soviet conventional forces even within the Western Soviet Union. When the treaty is fully implemented, and listen to this closely, you must grasp this, you must understand. When the treaty is fully implemented, the Soviets will retain in Europe only 35% of the equipment they held in 1983. Moreover, a provision of the treaty known as the sufficiency rule will prevent any nation, including us folks, from creating a conventional force greater than one-third of the total armaments permitted in the area. This provision applies to all treaty signatories. Ladies and gentlemen, who is going to supply the other two-thirds of the armaments and troops that will be located in our area? Good night, and God bless you all.